Hey everybody, welcome to a special interview episode of Uncore Gamers. I have James Patton here, developer of the game Spinmortality that we talked about in the last episode of Uncore Gamers.
Hi there. Yeah, it's Spinmortality, and yes, I do regret the name a little bit now. So Spinmortality is, I guess you already know if you listen to the last podcast. For anyone who doesn't, it's a cyberpunk management or strategy game where you run this giant evil megacorporation. You research horrible products, and you convince the world that they're actually fantastic. You bribe politicians, you deregulate industries, you can bring down governments, set up puppet regimes, and become immortal. So basically, you are very powerful, and you screw up the world. And it's currently on Kickstarter and has about 2 weeks left. So if anyone would like to pledge or share, that would be really appreciated.
Right, so why don't we let people know more about you, how you got into the games, what's your favorite game, and if this is your first game or not, for the people that don't know you too well.
Cool. So my background's actually in the arts. I did an undergrad on literature, and that was kind of interesting, and it helped me understand like culture and, you know, how society interacts, but just through the medium of books. And I wanted to do something a bit more up-to-date. And I'd always loved games, and I'd always been kind of playing around with little, you know, I started to learn C++ when I was about 8 or something, and that didn't go too well. But I was always coding and making little projects. And so when I moved to Vienna, which is where I now live, I decided to make a proper go of it. And I've been making like small games ever since. This is the biggest one yet. And my other games, the most important ones, the two that I did most recently, are there's one called The Gods Are Hungry, which is a very quick, like 15-minute flash game where you run a prehistoric tribe, and it's your job to kind of...
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. And it's your job to balance the material requirements of your community, like, you know, hunting deer, chopping wood, with their religious needs. So it's about like, okay, do you pray at this temple or this temple? Do you offend the fire god or the wind god today? That kind of thing. And it's kind of a bit of a social experiment, but I can't say more without spoiling it. And the other one is, it's called Masks and Murder. It is kind of a riff on the dating sim genre. I describe it as a Renaissance fantasy feminist like faux dating sim murder simulator, because you play as this noble woman in Renaissance Italy. Your whole family is murdered by these horrible men, and then you have to like train yourself in their hobbies so that you can lull them into a false sense of security, and then you kill them in deliciously ironic ways when they least suspect it. Oh, and you asked about my favorite game. I mean, there's so many to choose from. Probably the one that I like more than any is The Void by Icepick Lodge. It's like the sort of prototypical art game, I guess. Just because it's so different, and it's so evocative. It has this very kind of bold, bleak feeling of the kind of world that it's pulling you into. And the mechanics just make you feel a part of that world and its ecosystem in this really compelling way that's, I think, more intense than any other gaming experience that I've had.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that one, so I'll have to give that one a look.
It's really good. I've never completed it, by the way. It's just, it's really good, and I don't think I've even got halfway. But I like it that much.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, I think one of the first things I want to ask is what made you land upon the type of game you decided to land upon? I mean, it's this type of strategy game, it's one that I personally enjoy playing every once in a while, but it's not one I see very often with the management type of strategy.
I originally... Well, first of all, I play a lot of Crusader Kings and Europa Universalis. So that's kind of what I think. That's where my mind goes when I think of like big, complicated games about lots of moving parts, about expanding your influence. So the interface is actually very similar to those games, with like you've got your icon buttons at the top left, and you've got favor and stuff on the top right. And that's just because that's how those games do it. And it seemed like the most logical step for me. The reason I went for like management is I actually don't play many management games. But I originally saw this as a much smaller, almost kind of flash game inspired type thing, a bit more like what's it called? Adventure Capitalism, I think. It's basically a cookie clicker type thing. But it's about kind of making a point about capitalism with this kind of slightly goofy interface. And that's where some of the humor in the game comes from. So originally it was just this really simple idea of you get workers and you put them in projects and then the projects are done and that's it. And it was really simple because it didn't need to be any more complicated because it was just going to be like a quick flash game. But then I just sort of added more mechanics. And I added like politics and espionage and laws and all this other stuff. And weirdly enough, the management aspect of like controlling where your workers go, that kind of was always appropriate, so I just never changed it. And I think the reason why it kind of fits with this Europa Universalis style aesthetic, like this grand strategy sort of interface design, is that it feels like the game's set in the near future. So at that point, I think strategy is less about military conquest, and it's much more about like market strategy or brand strategy. And so it feels like it might not be military, but it's still very strategic. It's just that has to be translated into this kind of new world.
Right, right. Now, one of the aspects that I really enjoyed out of playing the demo build, actually, I am one of those people that I started playing it, was going to put like half an hour in to kind of get a feel of the game, and then like 5 hours went past, so the game's addicting. I really appreciate it, because when I typically, like I said, I don't play these type of games too often, but when I do, it feels like very much so that the developer kind of wants you to play the game and fail like 10, 15, 20 times until you learn every single mechanic. But I feel this game does a really good job just kind of easing you in, letting you deal with one mechanic at a time until you like, because that's what happened to me. I played like an hour or two kind of just trying to sell my technology. And I got to a point where I was like, I can't sell things. Laws, let me start looking at that, and the game just opened up, but it wasn't I didn't feel like I was doing it wrong by not figuring that out right away.
Yeah, exactly. I think the thing that made me most aware of this is whenever I pick up a new game, I might understand some of it, but I never understand all of it. And so the first time I play, I always suck at it. The first time I played Europa Universalis 3, this super complicated grand strategy game, I have no idea how I managed it, but through very, very inefficient play, I conquered like half of Europe on my first game. And that just makes no sense. But what I liked about that was that I was doing a really terrible job of playing the game, but I was having a good time and I was achieving things that were meaningful to me. And so I wanted to build an experience where people could play at kind of whatever level they wanted, as long as they were above this like very minimal threshold. And they would just be doing kind of okay. And people who are playing well will be rewarded for playing well, because if you play well, you get more money and then you can invest it in more things and it'll be faster and just generally you'll have a better experience. But the game doesn't punish you for playing badly either. And in fact, there are several failure thresholds which kick in to help you out if you're playing badly and if you're actually losing money too fast. And I also wanted to make it so that, you know, the game unfolds slowly, so that, you know, you don't have to read through an encyclopedia before you play. Because I really just want people to go in and get the game, like to understand the game. You know, they don't have to know everything in order to have a good time. And I think that's important.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really kind of helped suck me in that I wasn't just constantly like dying over and over again. So it was a good design in my opinion.
Thank you.
Now, one thing that it kept happening while I was playing the game, I was having fun being my evil corporation. I influenced the media to change the law. And then every once in a while, I kind of take a second and be like, yeah, this feels a little too real right now. Do you feel like this climate that we're in right now, politically and stuff like that, is really bringing a lot of attention to your game? Is that something you were going for intentionally?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly I didn't I started developing this 2 years ago. So bear in mind that is 1 year before Trump got elected. So I had no idea what was going down. That was a whole other level. Even before then, I wanted it to be real because it's meant to be a game that like you can absolutely play it and just be like, hey, I'm the cyberpunk bad guy, this is fun. I'm having a great time. And I think that that's not the way I would play it, but if a player wants to approach the game like that, then that's fine. They can have fun and it still works. But I want the game to comment on a lot of the kind of unfair stuff that's happening, given our like how our economies work, how our political systems work, how media is structured. So it was always intended to comment like that. But it really has kicked up into high gear. I don't know if it's led to more exposure for the game. Even if it has, like the game is kind of the smaller problem here. There's this whole big messed up thing that's much bigger than that.
Yeah, but sometimes different types of media can help people finally go like, oh yeah, that is something that's happening. Like, it makes sense now. Stuff like that. And I think this game could definitely help do that for some people and maybe wanted to live in denial a little bit longer. They can play this game and be like, yeah, it's fun. Yeah, that kind of does happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, I kind of hope so. Like, I don't want the game to be preachy because, like, one, nobody likes being preached to, and two, I don't think people respond well to preaching anyway. I think it like turns people off your message. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that people will play this game because it looks kind of interesting. And then they'll kind of see that, yeah, actually the media systems are kind of being controlled by huge companies who are influencing culture a little bit, or yeah, there is money in politics, and that's kind of a problem sometimes. And yeah, people are doing shady stuff behind the scenes, and we're not really fully aware of it at this point, and it only comes out in dribs and drabs. So I hope it does make people think. I don't mean to preach to people, but I'm hoping that I've kind of boiled down everything that I've learned about media, culture, government, that kind of thing, into just one interactive package. And I'm hoping that the fact it's a game makes it more accessible for people and makes it so that people can kind of can understand how the whole system works all together at the same time. Because it can be difficult to understand how all these, excuse me, how all these huge, very complex systems interact with each other.
Yeah, no, I mean, as far as I've played, it's all pretty seamless, actually. Now let's talk about the Kickstarter for a bit. It actually was a pretty interesting Kickstarter as I read through it and stuff like that. It's not something I see very often. This game is 80% done, and whether you get the Kickstarter or not, you're gonna finish the game. It's just being able to do it faster, essentially.
Yeah, like faster and to be able to make the game better because, like, no matter what happens. My plan at this point is pretty much to finish by summer next year. And if I have to work my part-time job while I do that, then that just means I have less development time. So that means that there are features that I just won't have time to put in. I'll do as much as I can because I want the game to be as good as possible, but you know, some things are just not going to make the cut. But if the Kickstarter goes through, then I can reduce my hours or maybe even go full-time. And I'll just have more time to spend on it. I'll be able to turn down jobs in favor of the game because the game will be my job at least for that period of time. And I will just add in everything that I wanted to add, and I will see how much time I have left, and then try to add a little bit more, just to add a bit of polish, or to try and, you know, add extra things that I think enrich it, but are not 100% necessary, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, could you feel like you might elaborate one of those things that if you were able to make the pledge, something you want to add that's kind of dependent on that?
Sure. There's two things that I want to add. We'll see how it goes. I want to add, first of all, some kind of like a faction or a backstory system for your CEO, so that like maybe your CEO is from a military background, so they have more military connections, they know more people in that world, and they get like bonuses to sending in like private armies and task forces and stuff. But they might have some kind of penalty to public opinion because they're a bit aggressive. Or maybe you're from a media background, and so you can use media for more things than just influencing culture. Maybe you can use media to actually push different political parties instead, because you're an expert in how to use media channels. So I'd like something like that, because it would, first of all, allow people to kind of customize their CEO a bit more and get more, like get into their characters a bit more. And secondly, it should help with replayability, so that you can play this game. If you love it, if you like the game, you'll play through it once, maybe twice. But if you really love it, you could play it three different times and have a slightly different flavor every time. It won't be completely different, but it would give a little bit of a different flavor to the game. And the second thing I'd like to add is everyone talks about the moon. There's a moon that goes around the Earth, and it's purely for aesthetic purposes. Because when you press the end turn button, the moon just makes one orbit. Right. And people have said, but I want to put like a missile base on the moon. And I'm thinking, oh, well, that could be fun. So I think that I'd like to do something with the moon, because it would be this kind of crazy, like uber cyberpunk nonsense level. But it would show you just how powerful you are as a company. And the fact that, you know, at this point, maybe companies are more responsible for spaceflight than governments, and maybe that's kind of a problem. So those are like the two things that I would probably add.
Very nice, very nice. Now, with the Kickstarter, how it's gone well so far and everything, you're already over halfway, still got 13 days to go and stuff like that. Were you expecting, you know, to get the 300 plus packers you have and stuff like that as quickly as you have, or does that come as a bit of a surprise to you?
I'm really not sure. This is my first Kickstarter, my first crowdfunding campaign of any kind, so I really didn't know what to expect. I was kind of surprised how quickly people pledged in the first day or so, because I thought I made like about 20% in the first 36 hours or so, and that was just ridiculous. And then I was kind of surprised and disheartened by how slowly it went from there. But I think that's kind of everyone's experience with Kickstarter, because it starts out strong if you're lucky, and then it kind of tails off a bit in the middle. I'm pretty lucky to be where I am. I think the only reason that I got there was because, you know, Alexis Kennedy, the guy from Sun, the Sea and Fallen London?
Not too familiar.
He made Fallen London, which is a browser-based game in a like kind of gas lamp gothic horror London, and he also made Sun the Sea, where you explore this kind of gothic underworld ocean. He's one of my favorite developers, and he actually played the demo and really liked it, and he said, well, maybe you should kickstart this, or maybe not, it's up to you. And so he's been pretty instrumental in just sort of helping me get the word out, because, you know, his name as a developer who's, you know, done some projects which people like, plus his sort of social media following, has just helped me expand my reach a lot more than I thought I would be able to.
Okay. So what made you think about doing Kickstarter? Did you ever consider maybe doing like a Steam early access or anything like that instead of a Kickstarter?
Yeah, I considered early access, and I initially discounted it because I just wanted to get the game done. And I think that the thing that pushed me towards Kickstarter is, like, first of all, it's a good way to try and expand your audience, because you kind of get two launches almost. You launch on Kickstarter, and then later you launch the game for real. So I was kind of hoping that I might reach a few more people that way. But more importantly, I just did not know whether I should keep working on the game. Because I've been working on it for 2 years, and I kind of, a part of me wanted to get it done as quickly as possible so I could move on to something else. And a part of me wanted to make it as polished as possible because I think it is a special game and it's interesting and I want to do it justice. So I decided that I would go to Kickstarter and I would say, okay, look, if it makes its goal, then I will put some extra special effort into it and I will make it as good as I can with whatever money the Kickstarter, you know, puts out. And if it doesn't make its goal, then I guess I should just, you know, finish it, put it in a good state, but not a perfect state, because, you know, you can labor over something for years and years and years. And it's sometimes the hardest thing is just to say it's now done and to just put it out there.
Right. Now, with the demo out and so many people playing it, have you gotten any feedback, things you think need to be changed? So I think like one of the things I was surprised about is that how I was able to kind of, you know, do pretty well in it. You know, I'm doing all right. I might even, you know, with the build I had, be able to finish the game. Not entirely sure, but does that feedback like that make you think like, oh, maybe I need to make it a little bit harder? Are you getting anything that makes you think you need to change some things in the game from the demo play so far?
Well, what you just said, I actually kind of was going for that, because I don't want to, like you said, I don't want to punish people and force them to have to restart in order to do well. And I'm kind of hoping, like, my ideal user experience is that people pick up the game, they start kind of shakily, and then they slowly get to grips with it, and then they are able by the end to finish it because they've mastered it. So I don't want people to have to go all the way back to the beginning if they fail. But if they fail really badly, they'll have to, I guess. Because I think that I'd like people to have a kind of a smooth experience. And I don't want people to have to spend too much time learning this thing. But yeah, there's been some feedback. First of all, I never got this before the Kickstarter, but apparently the end turn sound is way too loud. So I'm going to, first of all, turn that down. And second of all, I'm going to figure out how to add volume controls, because they were in, but they were buggy, and I'm going to actually figure out how that works for the next build. The other thing is that people have said they'd like me to make sure that the game doesn't encourage or doesn't like condone the horrible things that you do as a player. So that doesn't mean that I had to punish players, but it means that it's important that players, that I try to help players understand the fact that these things are okay in a game, but they're not okay in real life, and that they are happening in real life. So I'm just going to add more newspaper articles, more random events that kind of drive home the in-game impacts of the choices you make. I'd really like to try and tie the game together so that it feels like every action you do has some kind of reaction for actual people in the game, even if it's only a brief email or something.
Yeah, because I mean, you could do some pretty bad things, as I've seen noticed so far. I think my co-host Jeff, he was talking about, he had the choice of going into a country that had the limited resource and taking it by force, or, you know, not doing anything. He took it by force. He was like, yeah, I just went in there, you know, it's like killing families, making kids mine. You know, like, that's how he interpreted it. And I had the experience of not paying for health insurance for my employees, taking it to court, and winning the lawsuit to the point where I just don't have to pay for health insurance ever.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it's definitely the things, you know, the corporations wish they can get away with in the real life, but they can't. But in this game, you know, because it's a game, stuff like that, there's a little bit more freedom. And, you know, sometimes it just kind of makes you, you're like, yeah, wow.
Exactly.
I'm an evil guy right now.
Exactly. And also, even if corporations can't get away with some of these things right now, that doesn't mean that they might not be able to get away with them in like 20 or 50 years or something. And the game is on a long time span, because I want people to kind of understand how these things creep up on us insidiously. So I'm Also, I'm impressed that you went for the full lawsuit, because that's a fairly intensive route, but it should be worth it long term.
Yeah, I just went like, you know, give me the lawsuit, I'll deal with it later when it shows up. And then it popped in, and I was at a point where I was like, you know, I can get some really good lawyers. So, you know, yeah, let's just press the situation and see how far I can take it. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to press my luck, and I got it. So
yeah,
I was pretty fortuitous in that.
Good luck. If you ever run a multi-billion dollar company, don't do that.
Oh, yeah, there's one thing I wanted to ask you. So the game has the mechanic where you are aging and you can give yourself more life by transferring your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Did you design the game in a way where it's encouraged that you do that? But I would assume it's completely possible to beat the game in one life.
Yeah, I mean, I always knew that had to be in there because, first of all, it's just kind of awesome and it's a staple of Cyberpunk. But secondly, if that ever does happen, then it's like the ultimate expression of a huge advantage that super wealthy people would have with the rest of us. So it seemed like it was appropriate on lots of different levels. But it should be possible to complete the game just in one life. It's just that if you have a bad few years, or if you get unlucky, or if you are just behind a little bit, then the brain transfer gives you a little bit of extra time. But I kind of like the fact that you can complete it without transferring your brain, because you might be telling yourself a story where your CEO thinks that that's going too far, maybe. And then I don't want to force players to have to do that if it's not something that their CEO would agree with.
Right.
Oh, and incidentally, one thing that I do want to explore more completely, whether the game gets funded or not, is I do want to build out the brain transfer system. I'd like to make it, like right now it's just a button press, you just spend some money and you transfer your brain. I'd like to make it more of an in-depth system. I don't quite know how that will work yet, but I want to explore that a bit more.
Interesting. Now, I got to a point in the demo where I got my first rival corporation coming at me. Mm-hmm. It's a bit early right now. Every time it's popped up, I've been able to just undercut them, give them 5% vulnerability and stuff like that. But can you explain that system a little bit more, how that affects me in the long run?
Yeah, so the basic system is that after a while, you might get a rival, and then they try to get influence over you, and you try to get influence over them. And so basically the way that that works is sometimes they will act. So they will try to undercut your prices, or they will try to steal your employees. And then you can, but then you can like try to counter their attack by giving up something. Or sometimes you can go on the offensive, and then you can choose from a menu of like 10 different options. And then you spend resources to get that. The way it works is if you are able to beat your rival, that is, if you raise your influence over them to 100%, or if you gamble and you get lucky, then they stop being your rival. They become a subsidiary, like a daughter company, and then you just get a little bit more income every turn. So it's like a permanent reward that just pays out every turn. If they beat you, then I don't think, it's been a while since I made that mechanic, I don't think you lose. I think that, you have to pay like one third of your profit to them. And I think you have to pay one connection per turn. So basically, some of your resources just get funneled away into them. But because you become their subsidiary, they become your parent company. But you can still break free. It's just a lot harder. So you're not out, because that's part of the... Again, I don't want people to have to replay like 4 hours of progress just because they got unlucky or because they didn't understand the mechanic or something.
Okay. Now, one aspect of this game that I really enjoyed is the fact that you force a choice before you can end the turn. You know, it's usually, and that's usually the choices that really kind of push the moral boundaries. So, like, you kind of force the player to kind of like deal with the fact that no, you're a giant corporation that doesn't always have people's best interests in mind and stuff like that. And I really like that. It kind of helps sink it and helps me get into the mindset of like, I'm some corporate bigwig and I have to decide people's fate like every day, every quarter, as it were, in the game. I just want to say that's I like that aspect of it.
Thanks. Yeah. I got that idea from, have you ever played King of Dragon Pass?
Man, you're coming up with a bunch of games that I'm going to have to check out after this.
King of Dragon Pass is it's a game. It's really old now, actually, but it's a very interesting one. It's set in this kind of fantasy Viking world where you run a Viking tribe. And every turn you can, like, I think there's like 10 turns per year. And so as you do a turn, you move through the seasons. You can take one action per turn. But then at the end of every turn, you have to make a choice because these things keep popping up that they need to be dealt with immediately. And I just really like that mechanic because, like you said, first of all, it's a nice way to show people, look, you have to make choices because you're in a leadership position, and that means that you can't just ignore this stuff. There are some notifications that you can ignore, and there's a lot of mechanics that you don't have to interact with until later, but this thing right here you have to deal with now, and you don't have the luxury of time, because that's just how that's how life works, but it's also how, you know, organizations work. But I also like the fact that they're a really neat way to kind of package story. So you kind of know when you click on the notification that this is sort of important. And it's also a handy opportunity for me to expand the world of the game. And it's like it's maximum story and maximum engagement and maximum like efficiency for me as a developer. Because it's the place where story takes place most. It's a place where I know that the player must interact, and they are quite easy to make. Well, like, it takes a while to make them. It's not like I can dash around in 5 minutes or whatever, but that it's not like I had to make an entire 3D cutscene. I can write an email and I can build all of the decisions in, and it's not too difficult to add stuff. And I can add pretty much anything because it's just text and some options.
Very cool. Speaking about options, let's talk about the winning conditions and the goals and stuff like that. I like the layout, how you have the simple goals, the slightly more complicated goals, and then the actual way you win the game goals, how they all play into each other, kind of help each other out. Because again, you know, like some other games, it's not where you have to figure out what you want to do to win. Like, you know, I would say even like Civilization, sometimes it's, if you go in with a full game plan, you know, you kind of want to stick to that unless something crazy happens, stuff like that. Where this game, because everything kind of flows into each other, I feel a lot more free to kind of just let it play out until I get close to one and choose it.
Yeah, exactly. I like the fact that that's your experience, because I don't want people to choose their victory condition and then play from there, because that kind of locks you out of some content that you might otherwise consider. I kind of wanted people to try and to play the game and make decisions and just kind of see how it went, and then slowly to do their medium-term goals, which are called agendas in this game. They're like sort of super powerful projects, and to pick those based on what they felt was best next, and then from there to kind of to think, okay, well, it looks like I'm heading towards this kind of victory. This is the kind of world that I'm building. Am I okay with that? Because I kind of want the victory to be not this kind of pointless checklist, but to be an expression of the way that the player has been imagining their corporation running up to that point.
Right. And I like the fact that even like the I forget what you called it already. But the middle goals is like everything you do to upgrade your company and stuff like that. It gives you a bonus. So it never feels like you're doing it just because you have to do it to get to a victory goal or anything. Like, you want to do it because each of them gives you some type of bonus that helps you out. It's just, I like that design aspect and stuff like that. It really helps, just kind of makes everything a lot more fluid.
Yeah, I actually, my brother kind of gave me this idea. He said that like the game kind of worked and the systems all kind of sort of meshed together okay. But this was before the random events were really in there. He basically said that everything kind of worked, but he had no reason to interact with anything. So like, if I wanted to, I could bribe some politicians and change some laws, or I could do some black ops and espionage missions. But why would I do that when I have no reason to? And he gave me this idea of always trying to give the player something. And I kind of took a leaf out of the free-to-play book, because I think free-to-play games, they always try to give you something. So you're having a good time, so you feel like you want to spend more money. And so I just did that, but I just don't make the players spend money because I want them to be engaged and I want them to be having a good time. It's just that if I give them stuff, and if I make sure that rather than saying, no, you can't do this yet, I want to say to people, oh, look, there's this cool thing that you can do over here. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it's actually funny. You mentioned the free-to-play, you know, makes me think of phone games, stuff like that. Do you think of porting this game to a phone, or has that crossed your mind at all? Because it feels like it could be played pretty well on like a tablet or a phone or something like that.
Yeah, I have considered that, and a few people have mentioned it. I will have to see how launch goes, because I really would love to see it on a phone. Well, on a tablet specifically, because I think that could work really nicely. But it'll need a bit of a redesign, and that will take some time. So if it launches well, when I finally finish it, then I'll very much take it into consideration. If it doesn't, then, you know, I gave it my best shot, but if the audience isn't there, then I don't think there's any point in pushing it, if that makes sense.
Right. I want to go back to the final victory conditions. One aspect that I actually, when I was reading over them, and it kind of like dawned on me, like three, if not all of them, require you to literally topple pretty much like every government in the world to fit into a new government that works for that victory condition. What was the mentality behind having to make the players do that?
Well, first of all, the different victory conditions are about the different kind of world that you're building. So like, is it an iron-fisted dictatorship, or is it a state where people believe they're free, but actually they're being manipulated by media and culture and stuff? Or is it a totally new kind of capitalistic state that we can't even imagine right now? And so, like, first of all, it just made sense because I thought, okay, three different worlds, that means, I guess, three different types of government, because government is how the world is organized at a grand scale. So it seemed like a natural fit. But a side effect of that is when you topple governments and you found a new state, you don't have to found a new state, but it's really, really hard if you don't. If you found a new state, then you have to make the call in one of those compulsory random events, which is, okay, how hard do you want to like use military force to found this new state? And if you don't use much military force, then people like will be unhappy, but they won't die in huge numbers. But your attempt at forming the state might well fail, because at the end of the day, it's military force, which is, you know, nothing speaks louder than guns. And at the end of the day, if you want to found a new state, then this is what you have to do. It's horrific. And, you know, I've never really talked about this on air before. So I guess what I'm saying is if you, a CEO, a very powerful person, make the decision to topple and change an entire nation, to force it into this new shape with a new government and to seize power for yourself, that's not a purely neutral decision. That's a decision which it might be very beneficial for you and it might have very positive consequences for you, but it will cost lives. And people will die because of a decision that you made for yourself and the future of your company. And I like that because that is kind of how the world operates under capitalism right now. In the UK currently, I'm from the UK, so I'm more interested in UK politics than others. The Conservative government is in power right now. There was a report which was released a few weeks ago, which estimated that due to government benefit cuts, an estimated 120,000 people have died. So to my mind, this government, because they have a particular view of the world, because they want to enrich themselves and their friends and eat fancy dinners, they have blood on their hands. And that cannot be overstated. So I just wanted to put it out there that if you are going to control people for your own benefit, it will mean deaths.
Wow. But you know, there is the one victory condition where you leave the world a better place.
Yes.
I did look at that one and the requirements for that one. I was like, okay, this feels a bit more like a hard mode kind of a victory condition. Was that kind of an intentional feel?
It was. First of all, that victory is not like a perfect, everyone is perfectly happy now victory. It's just you leave the world better than you found it, which I think is, you know, that's a pretty good goal. It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be better. And that's all we can hope for right now. And it is hard because all of these other victory conditions, they work with the game mechanics. They are based on exploiting the game and min-maxing and being efficient with your workers and taking smart decisions that lead to you being more efficient and having more power and having more influence, which means that it's at the expense of everyday people, which makes the world a worse place. And then there's this one, which is harder because you actually have to kind of shoot yourself in the foot. It might even be impossible if you do it in the wrong order, because if you do a particular agenda too early, then it might actually make it impossible for you to sell enough products to actually make ends meet to do all the other ones. So it's really hard, but that's because I think that in order to make the world a better place, we're going to have to actively work against the structures of like capitalism and the political structures that we've got in place, because the people in power are currently benefiting from essentially exploitation. And it's only, and like life is going to get better for everyday people and it's going to get fairer only if we actually, only if the people who have power, if they either give it up or if it is like taken away from them.
Okay, cool. Now, the thought came to my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing how this game is kind of like a very politically charged game and the current climate that pretty much the world is in because of various things, are you worried about any backlash, or have you received any backlash with the subject matter of the game and everything and how it treats the regular populace?
That's a really good point. I haven't received any backlash. I expect at some point to receive some angry emails from Trump supporters, for example. But right now that hasn't happened. The only backlash I have had is there was a pretty angry argument on a Facebook thread where two people were arguing whether or not the game sort of is responsible enough in its attitude towards like whether it condones these actions or not. And that kind of, after a certain point, I just kind of left them to it.
Right. I mean, yeah, you have to let things slide off your back, especially when you're putting yourself out there in the public view. I would say that I do feel, especially if you have some consciousness of it, that this is a thing that does in a decent amount actually happen in the real world. I mean, even though it is a game, you're having fun clicking through the things, you know, like I said earlier, there's a couple of moments where you kind of just, it hits you for a second and you're like, yeah, this is what's happening right now. You know, like I'm seeing this in the news and I don't like it.
Yeah. It's all, it gets a bit real for a few people. Some people have said, wow, I would love this game, but it's way too real. No, thank you.
All right, man. I feel like I should let you get to your day. Is there anything else you want to bring up
Just to say that to remind people that the Kickstarter is still running, and that I'd appreciate their pledges, and also the build that we've been talking about, it is available for free from the Kickstarter campaign website. So if you want to play the game before you pledge, or if you just want to play it for fun, like who cares, you don't even have to buy it, you can just download that build and you can have a blast, and that'll be like, you know, 5 or 6 hours of gameplay if you want it, maybe even longer.
Yeah, I will say that I played the build up. It's so polished that if you were to release that out into the public and not say that was a demo, like, I probably would have not even known that was an unfinished game with everything they played so far.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good to know.
How can people find you if they want to follow you on, you know, Instagram, Twitters, all that type of stuff?
So I'm on, my blog is james-patton.net. And I'm on Twitter as, I think I'm james_d_patton. Yep, james_d_patton. Patton with an O. But you can find out more about the game at spinortality.com. The name is a mix of spin and immortality, because you spin products and you gain immortality. So that's spinortality.com. You can also just go to Kickstarter and put cyberpunk in the search bar, and that will get you there. Like, I think it's on the second row.
All right. And again, that Kickstarter's got 13 days left to go. It's over half funded. You guys listening, sounds like fun. Even if it doesn't sound like fun, I say go out, try out the demo. Because if you guys listened last podcast, Jeff tried it out. Not his type of game. Not the closest he's come to a strategy game was Final Fantasy Tactics. But even he just got sucked in and just wanted to keep playing. So even if you don't think it's your type of game, give it a shot. Because it definitely sucks you in. It just does.
Cool, thank you. Happy to hear it.
And thanks for being on the podcast. Actually, you have the honor of being our first developer interview.
Oh, cool. That is really awesome. Are you planning on doing some more of these then?
Yeah, whenever we get the chance. I mean, I'm actually surprised that you even heard about us, because I don't really do anything to push the podcast anyway. I just kind of put it on the internet and let it just kind of do whatever it does.
Cool, yeah. I think I Googled really hard looking for gaming podcasts, and I came up with this massive list.
Very cool. So hopefully the word gets out, you know, a lot more people. I think the Kickstarter trend is a big uptick in the beginning, and like a big uptick last 72 hours, I think I see people post.
Yeah, I think so as well. We're basically on track. We're 53% of the way there, and I think we're 53% of the way there in time as well. But, you know, it all could go pear-shaped. It's entirely possible that if it even slows down for one day, it might just start slipping, lose momentum, and then it might not happen. So I'm just doing everything I can to get the word out there.
All right. Anyway, again, just want to thank you for being on the podcast, and hope to see this game out on Steam and on my computer soon.
Thanks very much.